Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. UMSL, like many other institutions of higher learning, is facing tough economic times. Enrollment and income both down. Cutbacks seem inevitable. Chancellor Tom George joins me in studio along with St. Louis Public Radio education reporter Dale Singer. Chancellor George, thank you so much for being with us.
And Don, it's great to be here. Thank
you. Dale, thank you for sitting in on this.
Thank you.
Chancellor, these are tough times for the University of Missouri-St. Louis and other institutions of higher learning. How well are you getting along now in figuring out how to save some money?
Well, we are going to have to do some reallocations. The enrollment is down 4.5% this fall. We thought it'd be up 2% because it had been up a little bit the year before. And looking at some other issues, for example, our caliber of students keeps getting better and better. And we have some scholarships that we automatically give out to students if they meet certain criteria. Well, that went way up this year as well. So combined with that, we have a deficit that we have to correct. And we're doing that. This is a cooperative effort across the campus involving the deans. We have committees that work on this, faculty, staff, and students.
You're going to lose staff, lose programs?
Well, we'll lose some positions, yes. That's going to happen. And either losing some programs or combining them. I mean, we're looking at trying to do the most efficient way we can in making this happen.
Right.
You mentioned enrollment. I mean, any idea why your projections were so off?
Probably one major aspect is our transfers. In fact, our freshmen were up. But the transfers come largely from the community colleges. And if you look at the community colleges, their enrollments are way down. In fact, much down, much more than ours are down. And so that's kind of there's a window of error there, so to speak. And that was probably the biggest culprit for us.
Is there, by any chance, a Ferguson effect in the enrollment story, people kind of shying away from that campus?
I'm very careful not to use that as an excuse. Mm-hmm. There was an effect last fall, but we have climbed beyond that. In fact, we really used Ferguson as an opportunity to do things, certainly with our students, our faculty. And then we've had resources coming in from Emerson, from Ameren, from Express Scripts, particularly in the form of scholarships. So, I mean, when you look at what happened at Ferguson and then what's happening now, there's a lot of positive that came out of that as well.
Yeah. Such as?
Well, such as the increased corporate support for students. Mm-hmm. So now we have North County students in particular have a lot more means of being able to attend the university. Yeah.
What is going on with higher education today? Because your institution, the University of Missouri overall, and other institutions in Missouri and in other parts of the country are having the same problem. What's going on?
First of all, there is demographics. I mean, we kind of hit a trough, if you will, in high school graduates. Mm-hmm. Also, when the economy starts getting better, interestingly, enrollments tend to dip in higher education. When the economy goes down, the enrollments go up. I mean, for whatever. I mean, if there's more unemployment, people want to go back to school, get retrained. So there's a certain amount of that. Some universities and colleges overbuilt. Simply projecting what you think is going to happen in terms of your expenditures, your programs. I mean, we have to constantly be revising programs and looking to where the demand and the need is. I guess thank goodness we're in Missouri and not Illinois. I mean, in Illinois, if it's compounded just by the state itself.
Right. Well, in conjunction with this, we asked our listeners, a number of them, through our website to comment on what we were talking about today and ask questions of you. And along these lines, Janet writes, why are you building all of those buildings when your faculty have not received a significant raise and you are not replacing faculty who retire or leave?
Well, I mean, with the buildings, we need them. Our campus was built from scratch back in the 1960s, and a lot of the facilities we had, particularly the science labs, were becoming obsolete, and we had to replace them. Our business classes are all spread all over the university. We need a central place that we can offer them. Optometry, another building we're building. The optometry is located in what was originally a residence hall for nuns. So we're really operating out of lackluster facilities. We never really have, until now, a decent recreation wellness center for our students. And everything we're doing in terms of the building was in response to what the campus was asking for. And we went through our budget and planning committee when we decided to do the new science building. So it is too bad that we haven't had raises last year, and I wish we could have. The flip side of it is we've got really some now fantastic facilities that are going to better serve the faculty, and the students in particular, and the staff.
Right.
Let me go back to the enrollment for a second. As far as the demographics go, a lack of people, you know, turning college age, is that a cyclical thing? Do you expect it's going to go back up, or is this a long-term downward trend?
Just looking at the mathematical trends and the projections, it's starting to go back up. It's not going to go way up, but it's going to go up. It's not going to go down anymore. So we can readjust to that. Also, with us, most of our students come from the region. I mean, that's the nature of the university we are. And so, in particular, back to the transfer students, that's the dip we took was in transfers. If you look at our new students, three-quarters are transfers. We're a different kind of student body. Our average student age is 28. And so we do a lot of recruiting from what one might think of are non-traditional areas. And having said that, I've got to put a plug in for UMSL. I mean, while we're struggling with some finances, I mean, we still educate St. Louis. We still put out many college grads. And if you go to companies around the region and look, where's the biggest feeder into your workforce? It's University of Missouri St. Louis.
And they stay here. I know you're very proud of that.
They tend to stay here. That's correct.
What about the state's role in this whole shortfall?
Well, the governor has put a proposal in his State of the State to do a 6% increase for higher education, 1% for STEM, which is fine.
Science, technology, engineering,
and mathematics. My wife is a musician. She says the M is for music, but okay, it's mathematics. and then 5%, it's actually performance-based funding. So they'll be on the edges. You'll see some modifications, and the University of Missouri system hits all its metrics, so we're in good shape with that. We have to go through the legislative process. If we go through that whole legislative process and the legislature sticks with the governor's proposal, and you never know what's going to happen, and if we got our so-called pro rata share of that, we'd have another $3 million in our operating budget at UMSL, just UMSL by itself.
You never know what the legislature is going to do, but in this state, I think with this governor and this legislature, you have a pretty good idea most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, we had an increase last year, and you don't know. You don't know. And you know, right now with the issues that have transpired at Mizzou, I mean, I was in the Capitol all day yesterday, well, all morning and into the early afternoon. And, you know, the topic that came up with me more so than anything else were kind of events that occurred at Mizzou as opposed to anything happening on our campus.
Mm-hmm. Well, among the events occurring in Mizzou are the fact that the Board of Curators is now minus two people, both of them African-Americans. And there have been some questions that we've received from our listeners wondering about that. And what this means for the University of Missouri-St. Louis, is it well represented now with these two?
Well, that's a good question. I've been talking to – I was at the Board of Curators meeting last week and with a subgroup of curators. I mean, enough for a quorum. But, you know, when I was talking to some of the curators, they said that this might be an opportunity perhaps for UMSL, and we're looking at that, is to make some suggestions. Of new curators. I mean, it's really the prerogative of the governor, and then of course they have to get confirmed by the Senate, and that's some of the problems that we've had. But you know, we're looking carefully now at leadership in the St. Louis community, and we're going to make some recommendations for the Board of Curators to represent St. Louis and represent UMSL.
As far as what went on at Mizzou, how do you think that's affected the image of the university system as a whole and UMSL? I know one of the students who spoke to the curators on Friday made a passing reference to, I don't know what you call it, the mess at UMSL or the free fall at UMSL, but she made it sound like UMSL was just a basket case. And do you think the image is of the university as a whole and UMSL in general?
I heard her say that, and I went up to her afterwards, and she was in a rush to get away and didn't feel like talk. So I'm not sure what she meant by that. Is there fallout, at whether it's UMSL, UMKC, or RALA from events that happened at Mizzou? Sure. There are. And, you know, as things evolved this fall, we ramped up even more a lot of our activities in that arena, called the diversity arena, called the region arena of inclusion. And we have a bunch of forums that we did that were focused on the Ferguson events, and we were all set to then move into those forums related now to the latest wave, if you will, of what's been occurring at Mizzou. Mm-hmm.
We had read somewhere that you anticipated by this spring having it pretty well worked out in terms of what you had to do to deal with this situation, new budget and what cuts might have to be made. Is that still the timetable?
By the spring we will know that. Right now we're working on process. We're identifying a number of things that we can do centrally. We're probably going to offer a special retirement package for faculty that will get us, some dollars centrally at the university. Looking at some areas that are university wide, we're turning to the deans, turning to unit directors to come back to us with some scenarios of reductions, and then we're going to look more carefully at our strategic plan, look at issues like serving students, student credit hours. The students are key in all of this. And we have an organized governance process that we go through. We have a budget and planning committee, which is part of the University Assembly Faculty Senate. They're going to be looking in an open session these proposals. And so right now that we're working through the process.
We have another tweet here from Rachel, who is asking why UMSL is expanding and creating programs at the same time talking about cuts, referring to the establishment of the School of Fine and Performing Arts.
Well, actually, we haven't cut the College of Fine and Performing Arts. It's actually it was a college which had communications, media, dance, theater, music. We just merged it with the College of Arts and Sciences. Mm-hmm. So we really haven't cut it. We just merged it, have some efficiencies now in administration, and looking at how we can actually a number of the programs foster them. Some program we are adding some selectively as we reduce others, and I'll give you one area that we made an investment in this past 2 years is cybersecurity. We hired several new faculty in cybersecurity. Some were diversity hires as well, and that's cybersecurity is actually lodged both in our College of Business Administration and in our Department of Mathematics and Computer Science. So that's one area we focused on because it's a hot area and there's a lot of demand.
Has there been any hacking at the university itself?
As far as I know, no. But maybe it's good maybe to have these. We now have three faculty in cybersecurity, so I feel comfortable with them on our staff.
We're talking with Chancellor Tom George of the University of Missouri-St. Louis, Dale Singer, our education reporter, and I. We have to take a break. We'll do that now and come back and continue the conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255 or send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Chancellor George and Dale Singer. Dale?
Is there still a hiring freeze on at the university? I know you're looking for a provost and there are other positions that are open. How do you determine which positions to fill and which positions will go unfilled?
Yeah, good question. Is there a hiring freeze? Yes. Now, what we mean by a hiring freeze is I actually look at every position before it gets hired. University of Missouri, Kansas City had one a year or two ago, and they had to look at every position. Now, what I've done is I've got a small inner committee that looks at them with me. I don't do it all by myself. Now, having said that, we grant exceptions. Critical hires that have to be made, we do that. So while it is a hiring freeze, it's not like it's not an absolute freeze. I mean, there's thawing here and there, as necessary. Yes, we are looking for our current provost is stepping out of that position by June 30th. So we are looking for a new provost. We've got a search committee that's formed. We also are looking for a new vice chancellor for administration, chief financial officer. And we're down to the finalist stage. And I expect probably to make that appointment if everything goes right within the next week or so.
We have an email from one of our listeners concerning Provost Glenn Cope. Was that a way, the writer writes, was that a way of signaling that UMSL's academics are not headed in the right direction?
Absolutely not. I mean, Glenn's done a great job as provost. Academics couldn't be doing better at the university. And by any gauge and any measure, whether you look at outside assessment of our various programs, we get a lot of programs ranked highly by U.S. News and World Report, academic analytics, but looks at faculty productivity. No, academics are alive and well at UMSL.
We also have an email from the Scholarship Foundation of St. Louis. It's a tweet. Need is rampant among low-income students. Let's put the dollars where the students need it. It will pay off. You mentioned scholarships could be
Absolutely.
Affected by this.
And the additional scholarship dollars we have been getting from Express Scripts, Ameren, and others, Emerson, of course, have largely gone to students that really need it financially. And, that's the nature of our student body. If you look at the average family income of our students, it's under $50,000 a year. If you look at it at Mizzou, it's over $100,000. I mean, our students are indeed needy students, and we work hard in finding them the resources that they need.
Let's take a phone call, if you wouldn't mind, Chancellor, putting on your headset there. We'll give Liz a chance to ask a question of you. She is calling from St. Louis. Liz, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to find out from the Chancellor if UMSL has on campus any permanent African-American museums that the community and tourists can visit, and if not, is there an interest there to have one?
Let me answer that. First of all, we don't have a permanently dedicated museum, but we have several galleries. We've got Gallery 210, which is actually located where the police department is. We also have the Gallery Visio, located in the Millennium Student Center. And then we also have actually our fine arts building. And in all of these locations, we have various exhibits and displays. And very often, we have displays that are related to African-American heritage and history. So while we don't have it permanently, it does play a role. And, if you have a particular display or an exhibit that you would like to see, that please contact the university. You can actually contact me. I can make sure it goes to the right place, and we can put that in the queue.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Let me ask you, as you go through your budget-cutting process, do you expect that somehow the focus of the university or the nature of the university is going to be changed once the budget is cut, and what kind of changes you think there might be?
Well, probably what we're going to see is less waste. I mean, not that we have waste now, but, we have a number of programs that take, for example, programs that are academic that we don't have a lot of students in them, but they're nice programs to have. We might see that by combining them with something else, we could be more efficient. So what we're going to see are fewer people in administrative positions and more efficiencies in terms of programs and trying to serve better the needs of the students.
We've had a couple of communications from folks wondering about handicapped parking on campus. Stephen Robin writes, please ask, when will the issue moving disabled handicapped parking to make way for a new building as unsatisfactory now?
It's a problem, and yeah. We're working on that, and I apologize. And I know what you're talking about. You go up the ramp. It used to be where the original headquarters were for the KWMU, and those are all handicapped spots. But, yes, because of the new building, and that's something we're working on. I don't have an answer immediately for that.
We've done so much discussion about the budget problems. I'm sure you have many other things on your plate as well, Chancellor George. What are some of the other challenges you're facing at this time?
Well, obviously the budget is a challenge, but we're so many good things are happening at the university, and the programs are great. And, I mentioned some of our new facilities, the Wellness Recreation Center, that's open now. I use it regularly. People from the community can use it. Faculty, staff, and students from campus can use it. And just watching this come up is exciting. Natural Bridge Road cuts right through the center of campus. That's all being fixed up by the Missouri Department of Transportation on their dime. It's about a $20 million project. That will be done this calendar year. That's going to be very exciting. And already I'm hearing from businesses and from other areas that maybe want to come in and open up shop along Natural Bridge Road that would not have done that had we not fixed it up like we're doing now.
Do you think there may be sort of an optics problem or perception problem when people do see building and they do see a lot of that kind of activity going on in and around the campus? And then with all the discussion about the financial crisis, people tend to think, gee, this is maybe not as bad as they're suggesting. Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, most of these buildings, we all began when we weren't in such a crisis. And it looked like everything was in a different situation. And then just as it has across the country and across the state, most of the universities in our state have experienced an enrollment decline. It's made it more challenging. Having said that, as I said earlier, we really need these buildings. We need them badly. What we're going to look at is the overall space utilization on campus, and probably in the future we'll see some buildings coming down.
One thing I have heard people possibly discussing, and this is an idea that goes back 30 years, is possible combination of UMSL and Harris Stowe that would maybe can preserve the mission of the two schools but cut out some administrative costs and things like that. Is that an active discussion, and do you think that would be a good idea?
You know, it's not an active discussion. It was raised to me when I first got here, and it comes up periodically. But, you know, Duane Womack, who's the president, I know him well at Harris Stowe. We look at cooperative things. In fact, we did several years ago a cooperative master's program in teaching with them. But in terms of an active discussion of is there going to be a merger, no, I have not had any discussions like that.
Would you think it would be a good idea?
You know, I just haven't thought about it. You know, I look for ways that we can interact with Harris Stowe, and how if we can feed off of each other, and that we try to do in terms of actually merging the two institutions. I just haven't thought about that.
We have another email here. The emailers and tweeters are very active today, Chancellor. A few months ago, the university announced that it was discontinuing its newly formed School of Public Policy and Administration. And then the day of the first dean candidate interview, it was announced that the university was doing away with it. Why did it happen? And there's a perception problem in the community with some thinking UMSL doesn't have a PPA program anymore.
No, we certainly have a Master's in Public Policy Administration. It's alive and well. We have a public policy research center. At one point, we thought financially that we could combine them and create a new director/dean position. And as we looked more seriously at the cuts that we want to make in terms of being able to realign our budget, revenue and expenditures, it just became clear to us that we really couldn't go forward on that. But we stopped it before it went forward. And so it's you know, sure, there we were starting to do some interviews, but I think it was fiscally the responsible thing to do at that time.
With all of the discussion we've having and you're having concerning finances, is this pushing the university perhaps more toward a greater online presence?
Well, we are looking to increase online. We do a lot of online. Actually, the online we do more of than not is what we would call blended or hybrid. Just because we are in an urban environment and we're responding to what the students want. And we often get students saying that I would like a mixture, you know, face-to-face and online. But we are looking to increase online offerings even more. Yes, that can help. And so that's something we're doing, just along with our other sister campuses in the University of Missouri system.
Let me ask another question about scholarship money. Would you rather see it go more toward need, toward students who need the money to be able to pay for it, or toward merit to attract better students?
Well, that's an interesting question. Need, absolutely. No question about that, because our students are very needy. Having said that, we want to ensure that students can graduate, and a higher caliber student coming in, you know, sometimes has a higher chance of graduating. We have a lot in place to make sure that we can help students. We have raised our entrance requirements for transfer students, and that's to ensure that students can have a higher successful rate in terms of graduating. We have both kinds of scholarships. Probably the ones I focus even more on are the need-based scholarships, because our students, if you can't pay your bills, you can't graduate. And what I've been doing in the last 2 years is creating a special fund. We call it Finish Your Degree Scholarships. And these have been given out to students that are in that last semester of their senior year, have run out of financial aid, just don't have the resources to complete, but they've got the GPA and they've got the qualifications. And so because of that, our graduation numbers are shooting up. We graduated more students, almost 3,150 last year. Well, we set a record. We'll probably set another record this year for the number of graduates, and that's because we've been feeding dollars into students that need it.
But you will not be graduating them in August this year.
One of our budget cuts, yes, is instead of having commencement ceremonies in May, August, and December, we're going to have them just May and December, like many other campuses. I mean, we had a luxury of having them in August. Students can still graduate in August. They just won't march across the stage.
Everyone who's earned it will get a diploma.
Oh, absolutely, right. Yes.
We have a caller who wasn't able to stay on the line asking about what kind of remedial services the university provides and whether it needs more action in that area when compared to other universities.
We do have services, remedial, and we have a teaching and learning center. And, you know, as students need help, particularly the areas that we find that we need the most help are usually in mathematics and English.
Yeah.
For whatever's. I mean, that's – and particularly getting that general education requirement out of the way. So we do remedial work. I mean, we prefer not to have to, but certainly we will.
Is this your toughest period during your tenure as chancellor?
You know, yeah, probably. No one enjoys budget cuts, and I'm awake every night. I mean, I woke up at 2:30 this morning, and I just went to my computer and thought budgets. Now, usually it's not till 4 o'clock, and the cats wake me up. But this time, I got up ahead of the cats, but. Yeah, it's a challenge, but you know, we're trying to also look at this as an opportunity. I mean, there's some things that I'm looking ahead as to what we will be doing that we probably should have done anyway, but when you don't have a budget crisis, you just let things move on. And so I think, you know, what we're trying to do is come out, you know, even stronger with this. And we have a great university, great students, faculty and staff, great alum supporters, and you know, we'll get through this and come out even better.
Well, I know it's been a tough time for you, but some nice things have happened. One of them has happened to your wife. And you can brag on her for a moment because she had a very nice distinction recently.
Yeah, okay. That's a nice to be able to brag about my wife. Yeah, my wife is Barbara Harbach. She's a curator's professor of music. And a publication came out last month, and it's kind of tagged the 30 most interesting women, in the United States. And number one was Condoleezza Rice. Number two was Temple Grandin, and the list went down. They had Nobel laureates. And number seven was Barbara Harbach as a composer, and et cetera, et cetera. And so it was exciting.
I'm sure it was. Congratulations to her. I think my wife was number 31.
Just missed the list.
Doggone it. Maybe next year. Tom George, thanks so much for being with us and talking about a subject that's difficult to talk about, mm-hmm. but necessary to talk about.
Thank you, Don.
Seeing you again, and good luck as you work this out over the coming months.
Thank you, Don, and thank you, Dale, as well.
Thank you.
Dale, my thanks to you as well. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.